The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio. Tim Matthews with you, and it is Wednesday, May the 3rd. We're coming to you, and we'll be talking about what's happening this week on the PGA Tour, which would be the Wells Fargo Championship. The big significance of this tournament is that Dustin Johnson is back in action, back in the field, after his very unfortunate, freaky accident that he had at the Masters in Augusta a few weeks back. It'll be his first return, and still number one in the world. He's won his last three events, so we'll see how he does in North Carolina at the Wells Fargo Championship. We also have Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf, joining us with more hot opinions, as only Stevie Ray J can bring us, and we're looking forward to that. So a great week in golf we're looking forward to this week, so we appreciate you being with us here. Frank Bassett joins us, as always, from the Nashville studios. How's everything going, Frank, in Nashville? Still getting a lot of rain over there?
No, it's beautiful. We have a front coming in. It's gorgeous. Good. It was 80 in the mid-80s yesterday. Today, it's gorgeous and brisk, but heating up into the 80s. And nice. Tomorrow, the storms come. 2 inches of rain predicted. And Friday, a high of 59. So you sent it this way. Go. Thank you so very much.
And by the way, everybody, please send your prayers to Frank Bassett and his wife. They're almost finishing their reclamation project of their new house, and it's only taken about 5 years to finish this thing, but they're almost there. You're still married, aren't you, Frank? Because a lot of times that can be a wedge between a couple, you know, renovating a house.
No, we're still married. It's just a fight over the new refrigerator. That's all.
Oh, there you go.
All the new appliances. Something. It's just something different that I wanted that I'm not going to get, so there you go.
But you're almost done, right? You're
almost done. Just maybe another week, and we're finished.
Thank you, Lord. I can't believe it.
Then the landscaping starts, so there. But let's talk to Steve.
let's get in with Steve Johnson, Mr. Landscaper himself, one of the top teaching professionals in America, and been with Hank Haney for, 30 years now or something like that. Stevie, how are you doing today?
Are you stereotyping me?
No. What?
Okay.
Did it seem like
checking? You know my Hispanic heritage. I thought you were his.
Yes, I do.
Stereotyping. You're profiling me.
He's quadraphonicing you.
No.
Not stereo.
No. Of course I was. And by the way, Steve is hosting, I think, this whole week, Hank Haney's show, because Hank is suffering through Maui Jim issues. He's in Hawaii with his family, I think. And so, Steve, you're on Sirius XM on Hank's show all this week. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun talking to you guys, but it's a lot of fun talking, getting to talk right to the listeners, and they call in with their opinions and their questions, and that's what we do. We help people with their golf games. So, one other thing we do, Tim, and I should call you Scoops Matthews, by the way, because you and I broke the story yesterday.
Yes.
A little benign article from Gary Van Sickle about the USGA and R&A wanting to speed up play and wanting to play with the skill that the game requires, is thinking of outlawing the contour books. It's a book that players use that shows it's like a topographic map of the of every green that they'll be playing.
Right.
So you see the players out there that use the aim point, that have their arm bent and their 2-3 fingers up. They're trying to determine what the slope is on the green to determine how much break there's going to be on their putt. Well, these contour books take the guesswork out. They tell you exactly what percentage slope in every part of the green. And it's
right.
Scary sometimes. I tweeted at Hank Haney and at Stevie Ray J, our Twitter handles, I tweeted yesterday a picture of number 2 at Oakmont, which is a side hill lie, basically. I mean, you've got very few pin placements, and that's what the contour book looks like. And the USGA is thinking about banning them, which is and you were part of the breaking news, Tim.
Well, I feel honored to have been on your show.
The green book you're talking about? The fellows who have come out with that new green book?
Yeah, it's called Tour Sherpa is the on the PGA Tour is the company that does the book. And it is a very sophisticated book that has not only the contour lines, but it has percentage slopes every 3 or 4 feet. And it also has gosh, what else does it have? It has arrows and it has numbers, and it could be confusing to a lot of people. But what I did, and you'll see if you look at Hank Haney yesterday, what I posted on Twitter, is I colored it in just to show the player what parts of the green would not hold the ball, or what parts of the green could feed the ball back toward the pin placement. So it helps players not just on the green, but it helps them position their drive so they can get their second shot in position to give themselves the best chance to get close to the hole.
And Steve, what is the logic of the USGA to disallow those? What's their thinking? It takes away the skill of actually having to read a green between a caddy and a player?
Well, that's what their statement says. Let me read their statement to you. It says, the RNA and the USGA believe that a player's ability to read greens is an essential part of the skill of putting. Rule 14-3 limits the use of equipment and devices that might assist a player in their play based on the principle that golf is a challenging game in which success should depend on the judgment, skills, and abilities of the player. So yesterday in Gary Van Sickle's article in, Morning Read, Golf at a Glance, morningread.com, he said there may be two reasons. One was the skill issue, and the other one was the pace of play. But in the statement issued by the RNA and USGA, they just said, hey, it's a skill issue.
Wow. Yeah, it's so surprising, and it seems to me that it would speed up play, because then you'd be able to – you don't have to do the Christy Kerr –
walk around
and putt seven
different
times.
Be nice.
No, well, that's what happened. She apologized for it even. She knew it was unbelievable how slow it was. And so I don't know how saying the skill's going to – well, the skill still could take a long time, so it's not going to speed up play. And by the way, at Oakmont, Steve, you were there last year. I remember you sent me a video, and I think to everybody else too, where you dropped a ball, like middle of the green. Steve drops a ball on the green and – follows it with the camera all the way off the green. So if you hit a ball even midway into that green, it would roll not only off the green, but then 40 yards out into the fairway if you didn't get it all the way to the top on that green. And that's just an example of what you're saying of how severe that hole was at Oakmont, but other ones are as well. So, yeah, people don't appreciate that sometimes.
That was hole number two, by the way, Tim, which is a very short hole. Some players can hit driver and drive it on the green, but it's very severe. And it's hard to believe that as great of players as these tour players are, that they would get up on a hole that's 315 yards and be absolutely scared that they're going to be able to play this hole. Most of the players are hitting irons off the tee, and you're trying to avoid bunkers in a creek that runs down the left. And then the second shot is an absolute guessing game. How much is the ball going to spin? Is it going to stay? Is it going to roll back in the fairway? So, Oakmont is a great looking course, and I would love to play it once. I don't think I'd want that as my home course, though.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a more challenge, I think, than most people. A beautiful course and everything else, but yeah, it's you got to be on your game every day when you play that. It would be a tough one to play every day. Steve Johnson joins us, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf. We're also talking, Steve, about – sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Well, while we're talking about these good contour books, let me just tell your listeners that I bought this book at Oakmont, and it's $150. It's not cheap, but it's a very detailed book. And the player that I bought it for was a kid by the name of Sung Hoon Kang. And he's a very technical player, and I just wanted to make it real easy for him when he was planning out his strategy. I bought the book. I didn't know if he'd use it. I colored in the areas that wouldn't hold the ball, that would feed the ball one direction or another, and I just said, Son, don't pay attention to these lines, don't pay attention to the numbers, because the numbers can make your head spin. There's so many numbers on this green. I said, just look at the overall slope of the green, determine where you want to put the ball. And you know what? When he started play, Tim, he used it every shot. When the tournament was over, he tied for 18th last year at the U.S. Open. Would have been tied for 8th if he would have just finished. He finished bogey, double bogey, four-putted the last hole. But tied for 18th is a darn good finish for him, first year back on the PGA Tour. I asked him after the tournament, I said, how many times did you use that book? He said, I used it every shot. Every shot. Helped me determine, because the greens were so severe, it helped me plan out what I was going to do on that hole. And so that's how important the books are.
So Steve Johnson and Crayola now have a marketing
a partnership.
Partnership, and Steve's going to sell the colored version of the books, resell.
That's right. We're talking right now with Sharpie and Crayola.
There you go. Hey, you know, yesterday, speaking of a lot that's going on in golf, we talked to, on your show, on Hank's show that you were hosting, you talked about slow play, and Tim was on. I called in about it. This morning, there's an article in the Tennessean by Doug Ferguson. It's an AP article talking about slow play and talks about they've been discussing slow play, you know, for years and years and years. I mean, even Jay Haas was talking about it when he was a rookie in 1977, and what are they going to do about slow play? Pat Perez says put an official with every group. That'll never happen. So what do they do?
And you know, there are rules, though, Frank, about how long it should take. It's rule number 6-7 about undue delay. And I think we were talking yesterday about the guys that actually got the penalty. They issued a penalty last week at the Zurich Open. It was during the alternate shot format. And two of the players were playing with two club pros that got a sponsor's exemption into the tournament. And the club pros were struggling. They were the last group off on Friday. And they got behind, and they got on the clock. And the rules of golf says you get 40 seconds to hit a shot, 60 seconds when you're the first to hit off the tee or the second shot on a par 4 or the third shot on a par 5 around the green or the first to putt. You get 60 seconds. Well, because the touring pros, and gosh darn it, I can't tell you who got the penalty. But it's one of those things, introducing a concept but not having the names to back it up. But here's the point.
Sounds like Tim.
The touring pros were aware that they were on the clock. So one of the touring pros had a 3-foot putt to make, and the other guy went to the tee. So he was ready to hit. As soon as they hold out, he could hit the tee shot. Well, the guy that had the 3-foot putt missed. And so the guy that was on the tee had to be notified. He ran back. He putted it in. But he was in violation of the 60-second rule. They got a stroke penalty because they were on the clock. So
Wow. Well, you know what? But that's I appreciate anything to try to speed up the game because it is sometimes dragging too much. And I love the game like we all do. But that can be the death of it sometimes when it gets too slow and things get. They're talking about rangefinders too, aren't they, Steve? About not allowing rangefinders.
Sorry about the noise, guys.
That's one of the initiatives that they're thinking about. Allowing rangefinders other than the U.S. Open and the Women's U.S. Open. So the Men's and Women's U.S. Open would not have rangefinders. But you know what? The USGA and the RNA are the last to adapt and adopt rangefinders in competition. The NCAA allows them. The American Junior Golf Association, the highest level of junior play, allows them. But the USGA, and they're leading from behind is what you could say. They're followers. Yeah. They should be leading. They're the governing bodies of golf. And, I mean, I tell you what, when their six-month evaluation comes up, I'm there, they're not going to get a great evaluation from me.
Yeah, you're not a fan of them, that's for sure. And I know, again, you've got to do Hank's show on SiriusXM. We'll let you go. One last question, though. Back to today, what's happening, Wells Fargo Championship. What do you expect from Dustin Johnson? DJ's finally back in after a few weeks off after the accident at Augusta. What do you think we can expect from him?
Well, you know, he hasn't had really good luck there at Wells Fargo. He's played three times. He's missed the cut twice. But this is at a different venue. And the course looks beautiful. Eagle Point Golf Club in Wilmington, North Carolina? Man, it is a beautiful golf course. And, you know, I mean, just like always, Tim, I think the best players have the best chance of winning. And he is the best player right now. So he's going to try to make it 4 in a row. And if he can do that, he's entering into rare air.
Yeah.
He should have a better chance because it's not Quail Hollow. And Quail is just so stinking difficult. I've played it a lot, and it just chews me up.
And by the way, they're not playing Quail Hollow because it's getting ready for the PGA Championship, correct?
Right. They'll see that later on this year when it is about 200 degrees and about 300% humidity.
Yeah, sure. Can't wait. Yeah. All right, Steve. We appreciate it. We know you got to get ready for your show, and we'll all be listening again on SiriusXM. Hank Haney, radio show that Steve will be hosting this week. So best of luck and have a great time. People want to send the video again to you, Steve, to work on their game a little bit, a free analysis by you. What do they do?
Send a down-the-line video to golfschools@hankhaney.com within 24 hours. We'll shoot you back start of the game plan. That's our service to your listeners.
That's cool. That's
perfect.
Cool.
Perfect. And free, it's totally free.
Free service, I may say. Free service to your listeners.
You can't beat that. All right, Steve, have a great show today.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hankhaney Golf. And yeah, take advantage of that. I'm telling you.
That's cool.
It's great. You just shoot it from behind, just like you were standing behind your buddy watching him. Just take his cell phone video. And it's 10 seconds. You know, you don't need any warm-up or anything else. And they will send back, Steve and his people will send back very detailed analysis of your swing. Why not? I mean, you get some opinions from some of the best instructors for nothing.
Yeah, the best.
I'd do it.
Hey, I'm sorry about all that noise, but every Apple device in the studio started going off. There's an Amber Alert, and there's no way to stop that. When it starts, it doesn't. You can't stop it. So sorry about that. Anyway,
no problem.
Yeah, Steve,
no problem. It was faint.
When I called in yesterday to after you were on Hankhaney Golf Radio with Steve Johnson, I called in. We talked about the slow play thing, and it drives me crazy. I'm a fast player. I can't stand it. And I'm not playing for $1 million, you know, or $2 million or $10 million or whatever. You know, I'm playing with my buddies for $25 Nassau or something. So it's no big deal.
It did come up too. It did come up during the women's, the Texas shootout where they had the 6-hole playoff. And the announcers were even saying that, Judy Rankin, I believe, saying, you know what? I think there might be a strategy here where Christy Kerr is trying to slow play Nomura and trying to psychologically kind of mess with her a little bit by playing slow. And she said, and if that's what she's doing, I think it's affecting her, Christy Kerr, by kind of slowing down her game more than she's comfortable with. So
change your rhythm.
She was just trying to theorize, but she said, if that's what she's doing, I think it's making her not hit the shot she wants to be.
Yeah.
Everybody has a certain pace that they play at, and there are some players that are really slow and methodical. That's how they play. There's others, and Jordan Spieth's been criticized for that a number of times in the last couple of years, that he constantly goes back to the bag, right, and grabs a towel, talks to Greller some more, goes back and looks at his shot, comes back to the bag.
Has a burger in the clubhouse.
At some point, people are like, hit the ball. I mean, go. You got to go.
You know, we've all got buddies like this. We all have. I'm sorry. We've all got. Hello. We all have buddies like this. I have a good friend. Great, one of my closest friends in the world, lives in Los Angeles, Roger Sarchet. He's part of our Golf Talk America crew, he and Laura Bryna. Yeah. Roger does that. He knows that slow play drives me crazy. When I get to the ball, I want to hit it. And he purposely does that to me. He gets in, and I let it happen. And I know he's going to do it, and I still let it happen to me. It makes me nuts. So
the key, I think, for anybody that's out there that has either that habit or a friend who has that tendency to be slow – The key really is be ready for your shot when it's time for your shot. There's so many guys that drive me crazy because they don't even think about grabbing a club until after you've hit your shot. Then you look over at them and they're still going, and then they go to their bag and you should have done that 2 minutes ago. Figure out where your shot is and what you want to hit. Get your club. Stand by your ball. So as soon as I hit, I look over at you.
Exactly.
You should be within 15 seconds ready to hit your shot. So that's what drives me. It's not even slow over the ball. Get ready to hit.
But they're sitting in the golf cart, and you hit your shot. Yeah. They're still sitting in the cart. When their ball is 30 feet away, they could pull a club, be ready, be prepared, lined up, hit the ball. But they don't do it. And it's just it's a lack of
respect for your fellow players.
It really bothers
people. And then you compound that, Frank, when you put it on TV, and we've all – remember back, and I've talked to Lance Barrow about this, when executive producer for CBS Golf for a lot of years, they had to have a separate Sergio clock when Sergio had his waggle issues. Remember that? That was about 10 years ago.
Well, it was like milking. He was like milking a cow with that grip.
Yeah.
He just regrip, ready
to
fire.
And they would count. They would count like up to something like 25 waggles sometimes.
Yeah.
Back and forth. And you're like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Well, so obviously from a standpoint of a TV producer,
and Kevin,
you don't want to get
Kevin
you don't
Na
want to get
too,
on that guy.
Not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but Kevin Na, remember that at the Players' Championship? I was standing right there. They got – oh, it was really bad. The patrons just hit the ball, and they were screaming at him.
Right.
That was a mess.
And so you can't put a camera on a guy if he's not ready to hit the shot. So it drove him crazy, and they had to figure it out. Sergio finally got – the point is – I know they got a lot of criticism, and people are like, oh, everybody's being kind of harsh on Sergio. Well, justifiably, though, it was his issue, and he needed to overcome it. And if it's Christy Kerr or anybody else that's out there, and they're too slow, they've got to speed up. It's not like, well, that's just the way I play. And you're like, okay, but then you're affecting other people that are playing. You're affecting fans. You're affecting all these other things. You've got to be ready to play golf when it's your turn to hit the ball. That's all there is to it. And I think the USGA, RNA, and everybody else – getting in line with that. And we're getting in more and more, Frank, where millennials, as we know, are having an influence on everything. So older guys don't always get it. And we want to say, well, this is the way I want to do it. And I've always done it this way.
Exactly.
Millennials are dictating a lot of what's happening in the world. And if they don't like golf because of its pace of play and they don't want to support it, it's bad for golf. So they have to say, okay, what do we need to do to make sure that those 25 and 30 year old people with their attention deficit disorder are with us, and they'll watch, and they'll sit there and watch TV, or they'll go to tournaments and watch, and not go, nah, I can't put up with this anymore.
Too slow. Saying that about, well, that's the way we used to do it back, that brought something really funny into my brain, and you know my brain works differently than most people's.
Yeah.
It's, being from the South, I mean, deep South, where I'm from, when everybody was coming down, when I was living in Ponte Vedra, and everybody was coming to Florida, they had these I Love New York stickers all on their cars. All the snowbirds. And I said, you know what? And they wanted to tell us how they used to do it in New York. I said, if you love New York and you want to do it the way you did it in New York, take I-95 north. Go.
Yeah.
Go home. Well, that's maybe in golf maybe what we should do too. Say, look, you know, we need more mentoring in golf, I think. I think that would help. The PGA professionals, it's their responsibility to manage their club, their course, their game. And I think it's on them. They should at least put on an email blast to all of their members about slow play. Stay on top of them about it. Have the marshals be nice about it, which in some public courses you've played, you've always had, you know, General Gary, whatever. I don't want to say that other word I almost said, but he comes out, hey, you're gonna pick it up. No. I just paid $190 to play this public course, and I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's the evolution of everything. We see it, and it's not just – and I'm not blaming millennials. I'm saying it is what it is, and every generation comes along and wants things kind of their way. But you look at sports going back in history, shot clocks and overtime in hockey, saying, okay, we're not going to settle for ties anymore. There used to be ties. Hey, Frank, it wasn't that long ago where if you're a fan of the National League in baseball or an American League, you would never see the Chicago Cubs if you're an American League city or you like the American League. You'd never see the Chicago Cubs. If you were in Chicago, you wouldn't never see the Yankees unless they played the White Sox. I mean, so now they decided, well, why don't we're all Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Couldn't we all play each other? Couldn't the Yankees actually play the Mets? It was heresy. It was unbelievable. But they'd gone 150 years without ever playing the other league until the World Series. I'm like, and now it's wonderful. You're like, okay, the world didn't stop spinning just because the Yankees and Mets play each other and the Angels and Dodgers, and it's all fine and good. So things have to evolve.
They do. And speaking of things evolving, the salary for Nick Saban evolved yesterday, by the way. Have you seen the latest?
I haven't, but you know what? Can we take a break and let's use that as a little tease?
Yeah.
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about what that is, and we'll talk about that. We'll also let you know about our good friends at Golf Genius, because those guys will help speed up the game in any tournament you're playing in or any of your friends and buddies. The good people at Golf Genius are going to help you. We'll tell you about that as well when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Golf Talk America, here on PGA Tour Radio. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett coming with you. And we just heard from Steve Johnson with some great thoughts on what he had about some of the changes that the USGA is implementing. He's not a fan, if you missed it, he is not a fan of the USGA. And it's always fun to have Steve on the show. We were talking before the break about a couple of things. One is speed of game and pace of play, Frank. And that brings up, in my mind, our good friends at Golf Genius, who have been one of our sponsors, and tell people about what Golf Genius does and how they can help just the average golfer out there who's playing in his local tournaments.
Well, you know, Golf Genius is used by head pros to manage over 2 million rounds of golf, and it was used to manage over 2 million rounds of golf in 2016. To ensure the success of the customers, Golf Genius delivers a reliable and continuously enhanced product, offers fast and knowledgeable customer support to help them set up and run perfect events every time. It's not just for PGA professionals. If you have a golf league, it's for you too. Golf Genius has a relationship with the USGA, as we know, and they are revamping the gin program. So Golf Genius, Mike Zeisman, who's the CEO of Golf Genius, he's a genius in his own right. I mean, he comes out of the software world. He's really invented a fabulous product. And for our listeners out there, go to golfgenius.com and check them out. Great product. So, yeah.
Hey, stop all that fighting on the golf course with you and your buddies when you're having a tournament.
And it's always that way. I know I won't name the country club, but growing up, I won't name the city, but when I was growing up, there was one guy in our group that would always have maybe one cocktail too many on the course. And by the time there were 17 presses on the bet by the time we got into the clubhouse, and it was a battle. I mean, it was like almost like a war after the round. Golf Genius will solve that for you. They can do it. Wow. Hey,
cool.
French Lick, our sponsor also, French Lick Resorts, up there last week for the Senior LPGA Championship Media Day. I was paired with Brian Hammonds. You remember Brian, don't you, from the Golf Channel? The first first anchor of the Golf Channel ever.
Right.
And Brian's no longer with the Golf Channel. He has a new endeavor that he's pursuing, and I want to bring him on. So on the next show, let's bring Brian Hammonds in, and then we'll have two professional voices on the show, and then the redneck from Tennessee. So there you go. But Brian, shout out to Brian Hammonds. We'll talk about your new what you're going to be doing in the future and get people involved. Hoosier Golf, basically. I'll give you the tease on that one, but it's pretty cool stuff. Now, by the way,
we had another.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. After you.
I said we had another tease. I want to make sure people get all the information they want. What is the latest on not maybe our favorite coach, certainly Dickie Pride's favorite coach.
I was just thinking we need to
call Dickie poor Nick Saban was apparently ready to go to the poorhouse, so the boosters at Alabama decided to up his salary a little bit.
To $11 million a year.
Oh, good Lord.
$11 million. You know what?
He has to be the highest paid coach in any league, any sport in the country, doesn't he? There isn't an NFL guy making that.
You win the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship, how much do you make? 11.5.
Yes.
So in 1 week you can make 11.5. Now that's just not 1 week. I mean that's a whole season of hard work. That's a lot of money, but given the fact that Nick Saban, since he's been there, has increased on an annual basis the revenue from the football program over $100 million. That's not a big number, $11 million.
Yeah, I mean it. If you put it into perspective, I guess not, but it's still, you think to yourself, where does it end? I mean, these coaches are making, Harbaugh raised it up when he went to Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, for, I think, a $50 million contract they signed for 7 years or something. And, and it's, like I said, the college guys, because you can tap into the boosters as opposed to state money, which most of these are state schools. And at some point, somebody goes, okay, why is the football coach at Michigan making more than the governor, the lieutenant governor, the president of the university, you know, all combined? Well, they have boosters that they say, okay, the boosters will kick in half of it, and that's what happens at Alabama.
What's the revenue, too? I mean, how much revenue does the football program at these major universities bring in? And it's a lot. So, you know, it's all relative. I think you have to look at it from all sides. And and the governor and the senators and all that, I mean, come on, what do they do anyway?
It makes you wonder too about what it's like to be in the athletic department at Alabama. Like, you're probably, you know, you're the women's lacrosse coach. You look at the football coach making $11 million, and you're like, okay, I get that they bring in a lot more revenue, but oh my God, I'm making, you know, $52,000.
It's all relative.
It's such a disparity. I wonder how, does everybody get along, or are there issues in some of those universities? Because the gap within the same athletic department has to be enormous.
Well, we're buds with the golf coach at Alabama. Maybe we should bring him in and pose that question to him. I bet he won't answer it. I bet he will not go against Nick Saban for any reason.
I think they get it. I mean, I think they're like, I understand. They got 100,000 people every week. You're on national TV, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of what happens. But, boy, it's got to be at some point when you ask and plead for your little raise, and they're like, man, we just don't have the money in the budget, Frank. Just can't give you that $5,000. You're like, but you just gave him $4 million a year more. You can't give me $5,000?
That sounds like us when we go out seeking advertisers for this show.
Yes.
You know,
And we're the poor coach, not the Nick Saban.
Exactly. And Golf Genius came to us. Golf Genius came to us by virtue of the fact, and I'll tell you, Mike Zeisman at Golf Genius said to us, you know this, at the PGA Merchandise Show, he said that it was the most fun and the best interview that he had done with any radio program, any show, whatever.
There you are.
So he gave us some great props. So There you go, Under Armour. Under Armour Eyewear, so which we have, and Canoes, yes, which we have, and Wilson Golf, my new Wilson irons. I've not yet pulled the wrapping off of. I need to do that.
You're just going to put them in a display case in your house, aren't you?
They're beautiful. Those
they're never
are
actually,
gorgeous.
They're irons. Never actually going to. They're very nice looking clubs. Yeah,
they really are.
That was a nice surprise. And we need to follow up with our good friends at PXG because
absolutely.
We had
they were excited.
Their tour rep on, and they're like, hey, why don't we do something? So I'm like, yeah, I think we could do something with PXG. I've never hit PXG. Have you ever even tried to hit PXG?
I haven't. I hit Zach Johnson's 7-iron. Yeah.
I hit
Billy Horschel's club at Top Golf in Las Vegas last year. Shanked it. 3 times.
And Billy grabbed it back out of your hand?
He did. He said, give me that club. Get out of here.
Bad mojo on my clubs. Don't be doing that. Yeah,
that's what he said.
Seriously.
He said, man, you're putting bad swings on my club. Get that thing. Give me that thing. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a fun week. Wilmington is the smallest. It'll be the smallest event, actually, on the PGA Tour this year.
It's a small market,
yeah. So it's a big event.
I don't know what the population is. Wilmington's
small.
Wilmington's got to be, 50,000 people or something?
And it's
maybe?
Gorgeous. It's a beautiful place. It really is. So, and the golf course.
All of North Carolina is.
It is. Yeah. The Outer Banks, everything. Message in a Bottle, Kevin Costner, chick flick. Yeah. That was a Carolina.
Was that there in Wilmington?
That was filmed there, yeah.
And like we said, they moved from Quail Hollow for the year, at least, because it's been there since 2003, this tournament at Quail Hollow. But they're hosting the PGA Championship in August. And, boy, you think they'll have that thing toughened up?
It's that
PGA
course,
Championship?
That course on a daily basis for members. I have a good friend who's a member there and play there. And it's brutal. It's brutal. Yeah, I can't. You know, it's above my game. So. But plus, he makes me play it back with him too, and I'm just too old to be playing it back. I need to put my kilt on and move forward. So,
another pace of play issue before we say goodbye is just that. And Nicholas and a lot of other guys have been big proponents of that, saying, "Okay, let's move the tees to where you need to be playing, so that if you are getting older or your skill level is what it is, don't be embarrassed about it. Don't act like, oh, I can't."
No.
Play on the white tees. Play on the forward tees if you need to. And if you need to play 6,200 yards and not 6,900, then play 6,200 because you'll have more fun. You'll hit wedges and nine irons instead of hitting hybrids to every par four. You'll actually hit the shots you want to hit.
You said it. It's supposed to be fun. Make it fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy the game. Yeah. And that's how you grow the game.
We all get
to make
up.
It harder, you don't grow the game. If you make it fun, you grow the game.
Us men are the problem. We get caught up in power.
Yeah.
Power, right. You're like, I want to play in the back tees. And you're like, okay. And then you watch guys play from the back tees. You're like, you have no business being on the back tees.
Let me
Why
tell
are you,
you
back there
at French Lick at the French Lick Resort. Go to the back tees on the Pete Dye course there. 8,100 or something yards. Yeah, but it's just when you look at it from the back tees, it's like, okay, I can see Kansas from here. Just forever.
There's only like 30 people on the planet who should be playing from those back tees, to be honest. That's long for a pro golfer.
You know, before we go, one quick feel-good story. 2 years ago up there, weather was terrible. Brendan Sweeney and I had played, went into the bar. Okay, we went to the bar. And we're having a cocktail, and this young couple, they were on their honeymoon. We're there at the West Baden Springs Hotel. And we start talking to them, really sweet couple, and he found out that, you know, Brendan was involved with the French Lick Resort. And he said, I can't afford to play it, but do you think there's any chance I could could get me up there so I could see the course, the Pete Dye course? And it was misting and raining that next day. Well, Brendan said, hang on a second. He picked up the phone and said, what time do you want to go? How much time do you have? He said, oh, whatever. He said, I need a tee time for 7:45 in the morning, and gave him the guy's name and said, you're on the course. Go play. Enjoy it. Now, how sweet was that? That's Brendan Sweeney.
Very nice.
That's
Very
the whole
nice.
French yeah. team. That's how they act and how they treat people. Well, this kid plays it from the back tees. He shoots a 77, a 77 from 8,000 yards. He shoots a 77. I'm like, oh, my God,
serious?
Are you kidding? And he was just raving. He said, great course. He said, I could have done better, but I missed a few putts. I'm like, oh, okay.
And you said he had just gotten married?
Just got married, but his wife is a golfaholic too. She's not a big player, but loves golf. So she rode with him. And
so my question is, though, Frank, what was the biggest event of that honeymoon?
That,
I'm thinking it was shooting 77 from on the back tees. And the poor wife is like, do you remember anything else about our honeymoon, honey? Anything? No.
This is a family show.
Great round of golf. I know.
You're just saying. Good point. That's a really good point.
He'll remember that the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Uh-oh. 77 from those tees? That's amazing.
That was pretty cool. Hey, there's the music.
People at the PGA Tour, they roll that music.
They do.
Beautiful.
They want us
beam
out.
Footage yep. to get us out of here. Gotta go. All right, we appreciate Steve Johnson for being with us earlier today and on the show, and we hope that you'll join us next time. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody, for being with us here on Golf Talk America, and we will see you next time. Take care.